Welcome to Political Rewind. It's Friday. It's finally the end of a very long week. But so much to talk about. Jim Galloway, AJC political writer. I know you're as eager to get to the weekend as I am, but we have so much to get through. Let's keep working for a while, at least.
All right. Well, we'll begin today by saying today is the day that President Trump tells us you don't have to listen. You don't have to believe anything that Sean Spicer says anymore.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that pretty quickly in the show today. We know Mark Rountree is going to have a lot to say about that as well. Mark is the president of Landmark Communications. He's a Republican consultant and strategist, but he is also one of the best-known pollsters. He polls for journalistic organizations. Your big client being WSB-TV.
Yes.
When we promoted the show on Wednesday, promoted today's show, we pointed out that you have had a remarkable average in terms of getting these things right, whereas a lot of pollsters don't.
Thank you.
So we want to talk about some local politics today, but I think the way to get into it, and we're especially going to talk about the 6th district race because, Mark, you have a poll that's worth looking at on that race. But to get into it, we do really need to address the latest in the Trump-Comey story. Jim, it's a story. It broke on Tuesday. Trump was apparently surprised by the reaction. He thought Comey was so unpopular that no one would be terribly disturbed one way or the other. Obviously, that has not been the case. And as of today, it feels as if this story is not only not going away, but is getting bigger and bigger all the time.
Oh, no. He didn't remove a problem. He put a spotlight on it. And he made the situation even worse yesterday. He had an interview with Lester Holt of NBC where he himself connected the FBI's probe of Russian collusion with the Trump campaign to Comey's dismissal.
And he also kept coming back to really without a great deal of prompting. He kept coming back to this notion of asking Comey over and over again whether or not he was being investigated. Let's listen to just a little bit of the exchange between President Trump and Lester Holt of NBC.
If it's possible, would you let me know, am I under investigation? He said, you are not under investigation.
But he's given sworn testimony that there is an ongoing investigation into the Trump campaign and possible collusion with the Russian government. You were the centerpiece of the Trump campaign.
Well,
so was he being truthful when he says you were under investigation?
I know that I'm not under investigation, me personally. I'm not talking about campaigns. I'm not talking about anything else. I'm not under investigation.
Mark, that, of course, was President Trump talking about a dinner that he had with Jim Comey shortly after he took office, after Trump took office. He told Lester Holt he seems to recall or he thinks that Comey asked to have the dinner. He repeats several times, I'm not under investigation, Comey told him. And yet today, it appears that, number one, it was the president or the White House staff that wanted that dinner. And several people at Justice and FBI have said there really doesn't seem to be any reason for him to think that Comey would have said he's not under investigation. This is terribly troubling stuff, isn't it?
Well, it clearly is. Regardless of your political party, I think people have to be able to sit back and listen to both sides. You know, it's the part of the conversation I bring to the table is maybe on the more political side. And we grow more and more partisan. We grow more and more into our own filters. We filter our information on Facebook. We go to the publications we agree with. And it's becoming harder for people to analytically look at information. And, you know, it pretty much, I think, is going to become clear that, you know, one of these guys is going to be lying. And Trump, even today, you know, makes a comment that he you know, apparently made a veiled threat, as Drudge is calling it, that the tapes may have been recorded.
Yeah, we're going to
get to recording of tapes.
Yeah, let's get to that in a minute.
And, you know, you see, but to Mark's point, if you were a Republican and if you were upset by the fact that Bill Clinton in Arizona climbed into a plane that had Loretta Lynch, in there, and they talked for maybe 20 minutes. And they say they never talked about the Hillary Clinton email investigation. We don't, you know, nobody will ever know. There was no record of that conversation. If you are upset by that, how can you not be upset by President Trump placing a call to Jim Comey and saying, "Am I in the clear?"
I'll tell you what. As a matter of fact, Lawrence Tribe, who of course is very highly regarded constitutional law professor at Harvard. Although I should qualify this, Mark. He is highly regarded, particularly by liberals. I would to say that, I think we have to say that conservatives and generally Republicans are not quite as fond of Lawrence Tribe, perhaps, as others are. But I do think it's worth, he was on TV at some point today. Let's listen to a little bit of what he said about just what Jim is talking about.
You're basically saying, if you will assure me that I'm not going to be under investigation, then maybe I'll keep you on. We'll see what happens. I mean, it's essentially the language of bribery. It's the language of the underworld, of racketeering, not the language of a president who is supposed to be enforcing the rule of law. That is clearly on its face obstruction of justice. And it is characteristic of the way we know Donald Trump talks and the way he's behaved. He only wants loyalists. Yes, men.
All right. So that's Lawrence Tribe saying that in this dinner, Comey, there wasn't perhaps a conversation, probably a conversation, Jim, about whether Trump intended to keep Comey on. Whether that actually came up or not, the Tribe suggests that when Trump asks if he's under investigation, he thinks of it. There's a quid pro quo, perhaps there.
There's an implied quid pro quo. I would say, I would say that Trump was talking like a New York real estate developer. I mean, I think that he was there. There's in the back of his head, there is always a quid pro quo.
All right. So, with all that in mind, this was a morning in which Donald Trump took to Twitter in a very, very big way again. And a couple of the tweets we want to break down with you because, Mark, you already referred to one of them, and they're significant. But the reality is that here's a president in the middle of probably, it's safe to say, the biggest crisis so far of his short presidency. And he had plenty of time to tweet this morning. Rather than my reading them to you, we turned to GPB producer Don Smith and asked him to voice them, and here's what you'll hear.
Maybe the best thing to do would be to cancel all future press briefings and hand out written responses for the sake of accuracy. Again, the story that there was collusion between the Russians and Trump campaign was fabricated by Dems as an excuse for losing the election. As a very active president with lots of things happening, it is not possible for my surrogates to stand at podium with perfect accuracy. James Comey better hope there are no tapes of our conversations before he starts leaking to the press. When James Clapper himself and virtually everyone else with knowledge of the witch hunt says there is no collusion, when does it end? China just agreed that the U.S. will be allowed to sell beef and other major products into China once again. This is real news. The fake media is working overtime today.
All right, that was Don Smith reading just some of the tweets. Mark, you already mentioned briefly what seems to be a veiled threat in which the president says, Jim Comey better be careful if there are taped, if any of the sessions that I've had with him are taped, he'd better be careful. That's the most bizarre. I mean, whether you are a big Trump supporter or not, that is a really, really odd thing to have tweeted out today.
It does seem like it'd be one of those things that, you know, if he felt that way, you would let surrogates know. Let America and the world know.
It let does somebody sound else say it.
Yeah, it does sound threatening. It's hard to say whether anything is here. I think it's what's unfortunate is I think a lot of times conservatives and liberals and everybody in between, they have made up their mind in advance. So it makes it impossible for a Senate to deal with this question. If there was ever an impeachment question, I would find that hard to believe that they would ever move there. I'd find it hard to believe that they'd actually set up a special prosecutor in the end for this even.
Really? All right. Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that at some point. Jim, what do you make of both that? And then also What we heard in passing was the other story that came out of the tweets today, which is the president saying, well, you know, maybe we don't need to have press briefings anymore.
It was the one that preceded that was I think was more disturbing, which he says, you know, I'm moving so fast and I'm such an advanced president that my press spokesmen don't always know what I'm doing, or maybe I've moved past that fact that they once knew.
So he suggested that perhaps the best thing to do was to cancel the press briefings and instead to issue statements about the matters that...
Which would still be contradicted, as we saw. The written explanation for Comey's dismissal held up maybe a couple hours. And then it was tossed aside. You know, it's interesting, and I put up a post just before we came on air here. And when I was in journalism school in Athens, I mean, the one thing that was beaten into my head as a newspaper student was the word said. That was the word that you used.
Because it was neutral.
It was neutral. It was, you know, Joe Doak said this. Jim Bob said that. You didn't say... laughed heartily. You avoided at all costs the word claim.
Because the word claims suggests making an argument that may or may not be correct.
It suggests doubt. It casts doubt on the statement.
Right.
So what I did, it was interesting. What I did was, and I started to write that this morning, and it felt wrong.
You started to write what?
Trump claims. And so what I did my little Google work here, okay? Right? All right. The phrase George Bush claims appears 224,000 times in Google. That presumes I would presume that covers the 8 years of his presidency. Barack Obama claims or Obama claims occurs 298,000 times. Again, of course, across 8 years. Donald Trump claims, or Trump claims, in just four, you know, presumably in the space of his campaign and his presidency, shows up 1.6 million times. The language, he has changed the language of journalism. You cannot avoid casting doubt on what the president says.
I would actually... add one additional thing to that. You had mentioned a few minutes ago about the press secretary Spicer. I think there are a lot of people who would feel much better about this administration in all political parties if they felt like they had a press secretary who could communicate the English language well. He speaks poorly on his feet. This is not a good press secretary, and I don't understand why Trump, who is nothing but a walking media tsunami, he has a press secretary that cannot handle the press without tripping up over himself. So I don't understand why they have not brought on a new press secretary. It seems like this is the time to do it. They're making mistakes at the administration level. I think they ought to find themselves a new press secretary.
Well, Mark, Spicer has, of course, been, you know, had a spotlight on him because of the difficulty he's had adjusting to the job. I think we have to acknowledge.
Lots of them.
We do have to acknowledge that's a really difficult job, and we've seen other press secretaries who have had to work into the position, who have started out, a little bit rough, a little unsure on their feet, but by 100-plus days in, it's time for them, if they're working for a boss who gives them the information they need and doesn't catch him off guard, as apparently the Comey firing caught Spicer and everyone else in the administration off guard. Spicer's had his trial run. Yeah.
They could seamlessly do this by keeping him in the role as running the office, but having somebody else be the person who actually goes in front of the cameras. Because I don't think he makes the conservatives feel good. I don't think he certainly doesn't make liberals feel good. I don't think he is. I don't think he's helping the Trump administration.
Yeah, how would you like to have a spokesman like that in one of the campaigns you were running? What would you do?
Oh, it's happened.
I will tell you one reason why Sean Spicer is on, and it came out in the New York Times story that talked about Trump pressing Jim Comey to declare his personal loyalty, which Comey refused to do, apparently.
Yeah,
and which is. you know, perhaps a subtext for his firing. But, you know, there are politicians where a press spokesman can say, I will do everything, my very best for you, but I will not lie. And I know many, many politicians like that, and you have to respect, and they respect that, and you respect them for that. Trump is not that kind of fellow.
All right, but let's do this. I want to bring these two subjects together. Sean Spicer, what he knows and doesn't know, how what he doesn't know may hinder him in terms of trying to be an honest broker with the media, and this whole notion that Trump essentially threatened Comey to be careful of what he says because perhaps there are tape recordings in the Oval Office or wherever in the White House they met. And so this was Spicer at the press briefing just about almost 2 hours ago being asked over and over again about this question of whether or not the president tapes people who come to the White House.
Did President Trump record his conversations with former FBI Director Comey?
I assume you're referring to the tweet, and I've talked to the president. The president has nothing further to add on that.
And why did he say that? Why did he tweet that? What should we interpret from that?
As I mentioned, the president has nothing further to add on that.
Are there recording devices in the Oval Office or in the residence?
As I said for the third time, there is nothing further to add on that.
Does he think it's appropriate to threaten someone like Mr. Comey not to speak?
I don't think that's not a threat. He's simply stated a fact. The tweet speaks for itself. I'm moving on.
All right. That's Sean Spicer really not being able to shed any light, illuminate in any way the president's veiled threat that perhaps there are tapes of his meeting.
Yeah,
with,
and Comey. Number one, that has a long and fruitful history in the White House, stretching on from Kennedy. The Johnson tapes are still leaking out every now and then. Of course, Nixon was brought down when Admiral Butterfield stood in front of a congressional sat in a congressional hearing and surprised senators with the news that yes, Nixon had an extensive taping service. And the importance is not the tape per se; it's the fact that he just revealed that there might be a field of evidence in a probe.
Mark, there are this story is now, excuse me, 3 days old, and we've still heard almost nothing from Georgia's members of Congress, particularly the Republican members of the delegation. Why are they being so quiet, and is it the smart way to approach this?
Well, why? What would they know that others wouldn't know?
Well, they might comment on Comey being fired and whether it was a good idea or not. I should have made that the question. And they've been quiet primarily about this.
Well, they're getting the same version of events as the rest of us to a great degree. It's either getting the version of events that the American public had lost faith in Comey. And I don't know that they would have anything further to add to that.
The question becomes whether they're still got their fingers to the wind on this, Jim. I mean,
I think so. But you're starting to see some very interesting Republicans do some very interesting things. I thought when Mike Lee of Utah yesterday suggested that Merrick Garland, the rejected Obama nominee for U.S. Supreme Court, should be the next director of the FBI. I thought that was it's not likely to happen, but I think to me that was recognition by a very conservative Republican that big things are at stake here, and we are entering territory where we have to be very, very careful. It wouldn't surprise me to hear something from Johnny Isaacson to that end lately. David Perdue is a little bit more closer.
Perdue, he's did closer put out to a statement.
Yes, he's closer to Trump.
Yeah.
But the statement he put out was very, very careful and avoided endorsing Trump's motive for his sacking of Comey.
It was basically one sentence, I think, a couple of sentences. That's all that he put out.
But and quite frankly, the statement that Karen Handel put out in the 6th District was very much like that.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because we do have to get in a break right now. But when we come back, I want to bring this thing, the whole Comey-Trump saga this week home. We have Mark Rountree with us, who has polled that race and can help us understand where things stand right now. But also, Mark, in honor of your being here, you're one of the better pollsters in the Southeast, some interesting polling data to talk about from an NBC SurveyMonkey poll, which tells us why, perhaps, although President Trump is going through a very difficult period, he may not have any reason to really be that worried about how this is unfolding. We'll take all of that up when we come back to Political Rewind.
Take your spring cleaning to the next level by donating your car, truck, or van to GPB. We'll take care of everything, including free pickup, and send you the paperwork for your tax deduction. Call 877-GPB-1-CAR or donate securely online at gpb.org/cars. And thanks.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm joined today by Mark Rountree, president of Landmark Communications, a Republican strategist and pollster for WSB-TV. He's been polling the 6th District race for them. And, of course, Jim Galloway, before he heads off for a long and well-deserved vacation, spending your last Friday with us for a couple of weeks. It's good to have you here.
I'll miss you.
You're always welcome to Skype into the show, Jim. all right, so... Mark, this has been a hard week for the president, obviously, but how do you think this series of issues that have come up this week, what kind of impact are they going to have or are they having on the 6th district race between John Ossoff and Karen Handel? Jim already alluded to the fact he thinks they may have some significance. Give us your take on that.
Well, Landmark Communications, my company, polled this race May 3rd and 4th. So these series of events have occurred after the poll. At the time, the numbers were very, very tight between the two, and it's my sense that it really is not affecting the race in real numbers. That I think there are a number of people that see this, what is happening in the Trump administration, as a technical fight over technical details. I think a lot of people questioned right up front why Comey was even staying on in the first place. It was a very strange decision. I mean, they're strange, and then there is a strange decision to keep Comey in the first place by Trump. So I don't know that it has affected that election that much.
Is it true that this is a nationalized race, though? In other words, what are you finding in terms of, is this really a Trump surrogate against an anti-Trump surrogate? Are there actually issues that are happening here in Georgia in the 6th District that are having an impact on this race?
If this race had a sort of a budget between the candidates of $1 million each, you could easily say it's a local race. But with spending in this race going into the $30 million range by the time it's done potentially, it's clearly taken on a national focus.
Yes, but are the issues national? Or is there are there actual local issues
between the two of them?
Yeah.
Well, they're sort of sparring over this, but I'll be candid here. There are a lot of people that are saying Ossoff is a great candidate, and we're just not seeing that. I don't feel like he has connected with independent voters in a way that he needs to win that race. He doesn't define issues well. He doesn't come out swinging. You know, he'll have issues, and he kind of soft pedals them. He has consultants that are there to play hardball. And he may end up winning the race. He may not end up winning the race. But I don't know that he personally is a very good person at articulating issues from his
podium. So, Jim, just to pick up, this poll was released just a week ago today, at Channel 2.
Yes.
Jim, you know this already. Mark's polling shows Karen Handel at 49. John Ossoff basically 46, maybe approaching 47.
Yeah, with a margin of error of what? Four? Was it four?
Three, four.
Four.
And you got 4%. Undecided, but you've been looking at the crosstabs, the breakdown. Mm-hmm. When you say Ossoff isn't connecting, Mark, with independents, Jim, the Landmark poll shows that 57% of independents are choosing Ossoff right now.
Right, and I was in the other crosstab that really struck me was that Ossoff was leading Handel among women. And this is, as we were gabbing about this before we went on air. This is not a, you know, if this were an this district had a heavy African American population, that would make sense. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't.
The reason I say that he's not connecting with independents, I don't think he has the ability to connect with Republicans, and there are not enough Democrats to win this race. So there's just too Republican of a race. The reason I'm saying that, I understand you're correct in the poll that we have that 36% of self-described independents say they're for Handel and 57 for Ossoff, but what you have to take into account is that independents are actually not even voting here. Only 9% of the poll and of the electorate that is going to vote are going to be independent. So there's very few of them. He's not driving out large numbers of independents. If he drove out, if a third of the vote was independent, sure, it would be an Ossoff win.
Did you pick up any sense of where the enthusiasm is?
It's absolutely in the hardcores of both parties. We actually tested multiple time voters, like 2-3 time Republican voters. We tested 2-3 time Democrat voters. There aren't that many. There's only 17,000 two-time Democrat voters households in the district versus 77,000 Republican ones. The intensity on this, I think, had been early on for Ossoff. I think it actually has kind of gelled out a little bit for Handel. I'm not saying she's going to win the race. I'm not saying Ossoff is going to win the race. And I'm speaking analytically here. I'm saying that, frankly, there has been a rebalancing of this district, and it has benefited Handel. But it's something that you as a commentator, and Bill, you as a commentator, y'all probably would have already assumed
that
there would have been some Republican rebalancing.
I would agree that there was a smoothing out last week. I think this week roiled the waters again and made it make them more difficult.
But Ossoff has not capitalized on this.
Not yet,
he basically came out with some, you know, fairly wimpy tweets and comments about this. These aren't, you know, calls for resignation and some of the things that the hard left is doing. He's trying to pretend and play the moderate. I don't mean pretend, but he's trying to play the moderate role here. His base does not want moderate. They want blood.
Right,
and
right.
I don't know if it's going to work.
But if he's reaching out to Republicans and hoping to get them on board, I assume, Mark, and I may be completely wrong about this, that he's trying to be a little bit, he's trying to modulate his attack on Trump to not turn off the potential for at least some Republicans to come his way, although his whole campaign has been based around the idea of sending Trump a message. So
Now we've got a couple interesting things. On the Handel side, I thought one thing that was interesting that happened this week was that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce jumped into this thing, and they brought out an ad featuring Johnny Isaacson. And if Handel had her choice, that's the coattail that she would want to hang on to. That, I mean, Johnny Isaacson, the 6th district is probably he probably pulls 80% in that district. That's she does not want to be attached to Trump. She wants to be attached to Isaacson. It wouldn't surprise me if we see more of Johnny as it goes by. We've also got Paul Ryan coming in on Monday. That's going to raise the health care issue again.
Mark, so let me ask you about that. Paul Ryan, under normal circumstances, the Speaker of the House, you'd want the Speaker of your own party to come in and try to help you out. Ryan's approval rating is dismal right now, and he's attached himself to a health care bill which vast majority of people responding to polls don't like at all. Would you have advised Handel to bring Ryan in?
I'm not part of this campaign, so it wouldn't matter what I would advise.
Well, I get it.
I find it, it's a risky choice, I think. It nationalizes the race. So I think there's that.
Let me ask you something, Mark, and we haven't mentioned it, but you've been very upfront about it. You don't have a dog in the 6th district fight, but you are working with Kay Kirkpatrick in the Senate District 32 fight.
Absolutely.
She's the 32. This is the Tuesday runoff between Kay Kirkpatrick, the Republican, and Christine Tribbett.
And this is the race for the seat that State was Senate vacated by Judson Hill, who ran for 6th District.
Right,
Congress.
Right. And it is almost wholly contained within the 6th District. So I guess my question is, is it right to call this race a bellwether? Will it be a predictor of any sort?
I think it has evolved to that. It probably hadn't started that, but I think over time, perhaps it has evolved to a soft bellwether, yes. We do have some statistics on that. The first time in this particular Senate district, in the first, this is the East Cobb County, basically east of 75, for those who are here in Atlanta, east of 75, and Sandy Springs. In the first election on April 18th, which corresponded with the Ossoff-Handel election, in that district, 49% of voters the first time had voted in a previous Republican primary. Well, as of, and that was of early voters, as of today, it's 71%. So the Republicans are coalescing. Now, I walk on dangerous water here. I'm here to talk as an analyst, not as a campaign manager. I'm not doing that. I am talking as an analyst. I do think it's fair to say, analytically speaking, that the Republicans are coalescing at this point around their candidates.
Yeah, I think, Jim, we've noted this before. I'm frankly not sure if we've done it on the air, but we've certainly discussed it off air. Karen Handel, who over the years has certainly been a problematic Republican candidate, she's alienated an awful lot of people in her own party out there over the years, but she did a pretty terrific job. Once she won the April 18th race, became or got into the runoff, to bring people together around her.
To a degree.
Oh,
to a
sure.
Degree. To a degree.
She doesn't have Governor Deal yet. She has Brian Robinson.
Well, she has, Governor Deal endorsed her, but, you know, you haven't seen the side-by-side side hug.
Yeah.
Dan Moody has been silent. I think, who's the fellow up in Johns Creek?
Bob Gray, you're thinking.
Bob Gray, yeah. Yeah, he is endorsed, but I haven't seen him here's the danger for Karen Handel, in that is that this is just filling in on a term. There is another election in 18 months. There's another primary in 1 year.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't surprise me if one of those candidates in the field of 12 that lost
jump back in
and challenge her again.
That's right, that may be, but it is certainly my impression, Mark, that Karen Handel has brought Republicans together pretty well, and that's reflected in what you're saying about the coalescing of people around her.
Well, and if you go back in time, Karen Handel has never lost North Fulton in an election. And that's the center of the district, obviously. And East Cobb and DeKalb have a lot in common with Fulton. So this is an area of the state she's always performed well in.
So let me ask you a question that I've been trying to figure out. Your poll last week showed 4.4% of the people undecided. Okay. So the election is still more than a month away. If this were 2 weeks before the election and you had 4.4% undecided, I'm assuming, and I know that's not a lot, 4.4%, but it's enough to tip the balance one way or the other. So if it were 2 weeks out and you still saw that number, I think you'd probably assume those people were not going to come to vote. But what does that 4% mean now? Are these people who may very well vote and are still persuadable?
There are two groups. 10% of, generally speaking, millennials would be undecided at this point. It's a demographic group that vacillates a lot. Frankly, I think they're going to go down in the percentage of the impact of the electorate that they'll have. This is a June 20th election. It will get a little bit older than the first election. Second, men.
What do you mean it'll get a little older?
Because millennials and people with kids, they go off to the beach.
Gotcha.
They get summer jobs.
I just want to make sure.
So usually runoffs, Republican primary and Democratic primary, which this is basically a combined one of those, they get older in runoffs. They're younger in the first election. But the other group, and this is the most interesting, and you and I talked about it right before the show, and I wish our audience could see these numbers. They are on our website, landmarkcommunications.net. Men are supporting Handel, and I'm going to get to your question of who are
That's
the undecideds, because this is it. Men are supporting Handel by a 54-38 margin. Women are supporting Ossoff by a 45-54 margin. So women are going a little more toward Handel, and women are going toward Ossoff. Men are going to Handel. But here's the interesting thing, and this does not usually happen. If you look at who the undecideds are, 8% of men are undecided, and only 1% of women. Now, generally speaking, we're going to talk raw demographics. These are generally speaking white males in North Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Where do they go? they're probably not going to Ossoff
right.
in the end, if
right.
they vote. So there are some embedded things here that tell you that there are some strengths that Handel has that are above this. One is it's a later runoff, so it should get older. And two, more males are undecided than females.
Let me ask you, Mark, is the the Ossoff campaign says, and we've seen a good bit of evidence of it, that they've got an excellent ground game, excellent door-knocking system going on. Are there signs of that showing in the polling? And is that something that could slide underneath your polling?
Not as of that date, because we simply call people and ask them, and we do this frequently. We're a quite prolific pollster, and our numbers usually are pretty accurate. I would say, though, that where that would have an impact is on actual turnout. And if you could even get 2 or 3 more percentage of the vote at the end because of a real ground game, that makes a difference, rather than just paid phoning. And I would say this, as a guy, I do this for a living. The number one thing you can do to actually boost turnout is knocking on a door within 72 hours of the election. They have a lot of volunteers to be able to do that on the Ossoff side, and that is their strength, if you could say.
Yeah, and that's – I'm glad you point that out because, Jim, the reason I was asking about the 4% undecided is the question that people are asking me when I run into them out there in the world all the time is, with all the money going into TV ads, is there anybody left to persuade to vote one way or the other out there? Are those TV spots at this point – doing anything more than perhaps solidifying a decision already made, or are there enough people out there that they're still influencing?
There are no persuasion ads. I mean, Ossoff is occasionally. No,
I'm not talking about you should vote for me because I'm a good guy. I'm talking too about attack ads against the. Are people already locked in?
I think we're at 50% of negative right now. I think in the last 2 weeks of this election, I would suggest that. Particularly out of metro Atlanta area, outside groups are going to put up some of the most negative possible things you can find to suppress the vote.
The NRCC today started one with just a brutal ad on Ossoff.
Well, and there I think that was just the right – I mean, that was the answer I was hoping to hear but wondered about. These spots right now, more than anything else – are about suppressing vote, not persuading people to get out and vote against one or the other. They're suppression ads, yeah?
They are. Some of them are supposed to be negative, but you walk away and you don't feel like you were negatively affected. I don't know that most people care about. They're bringing up the $15,000 of chairs that Handel supposedly purchased, or as Jim would say, claimed to have purchased when she was Secretary of State. I just don't think there's context to that. Most people don't relate to that. And so I don't think this is actually really affected. Republicans don't feel more negatively to Handel, and Democrats don't feel negatively toward Ossoff because of the claims that have been made so far.
All right, we're going to have to take a break in a minute, but people are tweeting us at PoliticsGPB. Let me just read you a sample of what we're getting. Angela Ford tweets, "There's nothing the GOP could do to make me change my mind about them. They're choosing party over country and letting 45 do whatever." Dave says, and he's talked, Dave now talks, takes us back to the national story. He says, what gets lost in all the uproar is Trump's election commission, the task force that he's setting up, and we'll talk about that in a minute, Sessions' drug policy, and the firing of the head of the census. I didn't even see the news about the head of the census.
No, that's a new one for me.
No, I hadn't seen it either.
Okay, well,
I mean,
we'll
is that true?
Look into it. Yeah, well,
I hadn't seen it.
Dave, thank you for alerting us to something we ought to know about. Neil Cassidy says, Trump says no money from Russia. His lawyers put out a statement today saying, we're not releasing the taxes, but we can assure you his taxes show that he's not doing any business with Russia.
And Mostly.
Yeah, mostly. And then Neil Cassidy goes on, what about the Russian elite that have bought millions of Trump properties in Florida? We'll read some more of your tweets as we go along in the show. But let's take a break, get that out of the way, and come back and talk more about politics.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Georgia Public Broadcasting. We're an 18-station radio network of GPB. GPB Atlanta is licensed to Georgia State University, a major contributor to the economic and cultural vitality of downtown Atlanta and the metro Atlanta area.
I'm Steve Morris, the managing partner for Atlanta Gastroenterology Associates. We treat and diagnose digestive and liver conditions for both adult and pediatric patients. We found that through GPB, this was a great way to get our message out. GPB listeners are highly educated and influential and community-minded. It's very important to support community-oriented organizations such as GPB.
To find out more about becoming a corporate sponsor, email sponsorship@gpb.org.
We're back. Mark Rountree, Landmark Communications, is with us, and so is, of course, Jim Galloway from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
And could I add that we've got a visitor, a Vivian Rountree, an aspiring child actress, is...
How did you learn that already? You just met her right before the show went on the air.
She handed me her resume.
Welcome, Vivian. It's nice to have you in the studio. Jim, real quick, you have a column coming out Sunday. We always like to get a quick preview from you.
Well, November 1st, Sam Olens took over as president of KSU and was met with a huge LGBT protest.
Yeah.
This is about the peace that he's made and the comfort level he's gotten as a Republican. He still calls himself a Republican, but he's not one that has to pass a Republican primary.
Yeah, you're right. He went up there and really did face some serious critics and protests based on his activities as an attorney general. But those of us who've dealt with Sam Olens over the years figured that if anybody knew how to take something like that on and try to bring people together, it was probably Olens. And he seems to have done it at this point. So good for him.
Yeah. This was Olens. This wasn't Olens, the attorney general, so much as Sam Olens, the former Cobb County Commission chairman.
Right. A guy who really knew how to build coalitions back in those days. I also, as long as we're taking a minute away from the topic, something happened this week that I really had meant to make note of, and I don't want the week to go by before we get a chance to. Many of you who've been listening to the show for a long time will remember our star intern, Robert Jimison. He was just one of the finest interns you could ever possibly have on a radio show. And Robert, we need to congratulate him because this week, he graduated from Georgia State. He got his bachelor's degree from Georgia State. And Robert, we just wanted to take a minute to say good for you. We look forward to seeing you out in the world. Jim, I suspect that we'll be covering his race for governor or senator. Who knows?
You might be.
All right. Let's go on. Real quickly, Mark, here's what's interesting. I said during a break that leading into a break, that there are reasons why Trump is probably not as worried as some people would like to think he would be about where he stands. NBC had a SurveyMonkey poll. Now, I don't know about these SurveyMonkey polls. These are online web polls, right?
It makes you wonder if they... When they named it, they knew they were going to be big because I think the name itself hurts it. But they've been right on some things, right, and they've been wrong on some things.
Well, okay, so...
But there's a certain amount of self-selection in these polls,
yes,
right?
Yes.
But I think it's important to point out that the polls, breaking down the various questions about Trump firing Comey, what you come down to is Republicans continue to be entirely supportive of him. And in most of the national polling, when it comes to approval or disapproval, Trump remains up at around 80%+ approval from Republicans. Now, that's not enough people to elect him, to reelect him as president, but it gives him a good starting point, Mark.
My sense is that most people see this as Washington inside fighting, and that it does not have an electoral effect.
Yeah, when you read the stories about Trump supporters...
At this stage.
Yeah, and Jim, when you read stories, either the Times or the Post, and I frankly don't remember which, the other yesterday, had a piece talking to Trump supporters about the Comey matter. And it shouldn't be surprising to us that they are standing by their man and that they accuse us in the media, they accuse Democrats of a scorched earth campaign to get rid of Trump, who doesn't deserve any of this.
And I think that's going to continue for the better part of a year or more. At that point, I think you are going to see some Republicans making the decision of whether to challenge Trump in a 2020 primary.
Yeah, yeah.
And when that, when they start to surface, when they start to make their cases, then those hardcore Republicans will be given another choice, and I wonder which way they will go then.
All right, and we're going to watch all that over the next year. I want to turn to another story in the news this week that relates to Georgia, Jim. There was a strange, I think that's a fair word to use, episode in Charleston, West Virginia this week. HHS Secretary Tom Price, our own former Georgia mm-hmm. congressman, whose a seat is up for grabs on June 20th, was in Charleston to give some sort of talk. And a reporter named Dan Heyman, who works for the Public News Service up there, caught up with Price as Price was walking through the hallway and started shouting a question at him, asking whether domestic violence would be considered a pre-existing condition under the new health care plan.
Right.
And he persisted, even though Price kept walking and ignored him, and he was arrested.
Yeah, he said that he held up. He was trying to record any answer that Price might have given, and so he held up his cell phone to record it over the shoulder of a Secret Service agent. He was deemed to be interfering in state business. Was handcuffed, jailed, released on $5,000 bond, and. This was Monday. I think Price was questioned about it by the Boston Globe on Wednesday, and the point that Price made was, you know, I mean, Price has never had really close relations with the press in Georgia. I mean, he always kept us.
Well, it's pretty much you two at this point. So
right, yeah.
The rest of them are mostly gone.
He's kept us at arm's length. But his point was, this wasn't a press conference.
Yeah. It was a moment in which Price could have chosen a different way to go. You know, you could have said, gee, this was a misunderstanding. I wish I don't want somebody to be arrested.
He was trying to be supportive of the law enforcement officers. There was a way to do that. You know, just to say I'm sorry this happened, but you know, they made the decision and not me. But no, this was not a press conference, so he wasn't. The implication was that he wasn't entitled to ask the question.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Mark, you've dealt with reporters for a long time in your job, and it is certainly true. We don't know this reporter. We don't know Dan
But we're an annoying lot.
Right. Well, that's right. I mean, for all we know, Dan Heyman was being completely obnoxious in the way he was chasing Price down the hall. I've certainly been completely obnoxious in chasing some political leaders down the hall. But there's nothing in the First Amendment that says that freedom of the press is denied to those who are obnoxious in the execution of their work.
Well, Price himself, I think, pretty much by all accounts, had no role in the arrest
right.
of the fellow. It was the West Virginia State Police,
right.
and
right.
You know, he may or may not have been, you know, choosing his words in a particular way, but we're getting very judgmental on Tom, it sounds like to me, on Tom Price.
Well, I think
he's the elected official, so you can. But I think there is something to say. I think there's also something to say, though, in reality, that there has been just an explosion of and it's anger-based, but there's been an explosion of disrespect, human disrespect. I'm not talking about politicians. They're always getting beaten up, but just human disrespect in the political discourse. I think it's frustrating to politicians that really do mean to do well.
You checked about Dave's tweet about
yes.
the head of census, and Kath, you checked. He did, in fact, resign.
Catherine
Cummings, who's a listener to our show, tweets, he resigned due to budget cuts. I haven't had a chance to read the whole write-through of that, but that may very well be the possible explanation of that. But that does lead us to this question, Jim, about another thing that President Trump did this week. He signed an executive order to have a task force commission. I'm not sure which are the right words. to look into election fraud And apparently suppression of the vote. Now, I think those are two interesting words to put together because we know fraud is what Donald Trump says happened in November of 2016. Millions of people voting.
3 million people.
Whereas suppression tends to be an issue that Democrats seize upon to say that efforts like voter ID and that sort of thing keep Democratic voters from the polls. Which do you think they'll really work on?
I haven't taken a look at. Well, I've taken a glance at who's in there, who's on that commission, and there are many people who are very suspicious of Hispanic voters coming to the polls and illegal immigrants voting. So we are pretty certain. Look, there are some legitimate issues. I mean, this is a very mobile society. People move all the time. They die all the time. And states they're not putting the money that a lot of them aren't putting the money that they need to making sure the voter rolls are accurate and clean. And Mark could attest to this just by virtue of being a pollster. You have to get accurate voter registration lists.
But none of that has to do with whether 3 or 4 million people voted illegally.
No, and that's so the question is where do you concentrate on the legitimate stuff, or do you start chasing ghosts?
Yeah.
Well, there's a whole lot embedded with those questions. My company was actually the first company back in I guess it was 1991 to build a statewide electronic file. We did it even before the state of Georgia. Georgia used to be based on 50% of it was index cards when I was coming around. So, we've been monitoring a database. I don't see a mass group of illegal voters in the sense of illegal aliens. I have personally seen a lot of problems, though, with the state file, with the state voter file, and we only manage the Georgia one. And so there could be some blending of what is illegal immigrants voting versus felons who are still able to vote because no one cross-checks. And, a felon doesn't go admit they're a felon when they register. So there are issues of duplication of voters. There are issues with the voter file.
There are even people like Steve Bannon who has two residencies in two different places and, presumably can vote in either or both of those places.
Right. And I think Corey Lewandowski.
Yeah. All right. We're out of time for today's show. I'm sorry to say it went very quickly. Mark Rountree, it's always a pleasure to have you in. Thank you for being here today.
Very much.
We're going to get one more poll from you, at least, I assume, before June 20th, yes?
I believe that's going to be true, yes.
Okay, let's see how much money WSB-TV wants to put into this thing, Galloway. Jim Galloway, have a wonderful vacation. You deserve the rest. Enjoy.
I'll try to listen.
Thanks for coming, Vivian.
And Vivian, yeah, we're delighted to have you here. A couple quick notes. You can call us at 678-757-4472. It's a recorded line where you can leave a message telling us what the issues are. What do you care about? What do you want to talk about on this show? Just keep your message short and leave us your name and where you're calling from. And finally, I want to say we've just finished completely our pledge drive. Those of you who listen to Political Rewind, your generosity has been overwhelming. And everyone here at GPB knows that and appreciates that. And that certainly includes me. That's it for us. We'll be back Monday at 2. Tanya Ott is in the next studio to take you through All Things Considered. See you Monday.